It's time for Barreled Up by Ball Cap Sports. Here's your host, Jim Wiley.
So,
boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
We had two different games happening tonight, Sunday Night Baseball, Dodgers and Braves. We had a very good pitching matchup with Buehler and Morton, and that's really good for the Dodgers. Buehler with his best start of the season. It's the kind of momentum, it's what you're looking for as you are with just 2 weeks left in the season, trying to figure out who's going to start postseason games. Who can we count on in postseason games? Maybe Walker Buehler will be one of those guys. But tonight, in the ninth, an absolute statement from the Dodgers. And what's the statement? The statement is that any moment, any inning, at any time, this Dodgers team can explode and go off. I was watching the game and I'm thinking, oh boy, the Braves are going to regret how the bottom of the eighth went. And then Will Smith had the near home run. And I'm thinking, oh, that run's probably going to score. They're going to wish they could have pushed two across. They had an opportunity. None of that even mattered. None of it mattered. What happened in the eighth inning? What happened at all at any point throughout the game? The Braves missed opportunities, this and that, because if you only score two runs and Walker Buehler's out there, you're thinking, hey, lots of missed opportunities. Five walks, we got to score more runs when the starting pitcher walks five guys. None of that mattered, because in the ninth inning, the Dodgers absolutely exploded. Seven runs, a back-to-back-to-back moment in that game, and it all happened with two outs, and it all happened against a relief pitcher who had been arguably the best relief pitcher, the best closer since the middle of June. He hadn't allowed a run. No runs allowed since the middle of June, and even that June 18th, it was two-run home run, and before that, that was all he gave up in all of June. So Raisel Iglesias had been unbelievably good, and that didn't matter. It's a statement. It is a statement that this Dodgers lineup could go off at any time. And Dodger fans, you were waiting for it, right? Because you hadn't seen it. They play, thankfully, thank you God, they play again tomorrow. But the first two games of this series, Friday and Saturday, you're like, what's happening? What is going on? Why can't we do damage against Spencer Schwellenbach? You understand and you know why you can't do damage against Chris Sale, but two runs on Friday, one run on Saturday, two runs until the ninth inning today. Come on, guys. At any moment, this lineup can absolutely pop off, and they did, and they needed it. Again, after a slow start to this, well, slow start to the series, we're past the midway point. We're in the third game of this four-game series, and just we're waiting for it, and it finally came through. Again, two outs, Smith with the near home run. They get the next guy out. They intentionally walk Ohtani, and they bring up Mookie Betts, and the foreshadowing, the MLB script writers, it was lined up perfectly. Mookie Betts earlier in the game doing the interview talking about how Ohtani was walked to get to him, and he gets up for that moment. He's like, all right, here we go. You want me? You got me. Let's go. And Mookie Betts comes through, puts him up, and then it just completely unraveled from there. The ball gets behind the left fielder, then the ball starts flying over the wall, and it absolutely completely imploded at that moment. And that's just, in that moment, you give the credit to the Dodgers because they came through again against the best closer in the game since June 1st. Again, June 18th was the last time he had given up runs, but he had not given up any runs in the month of June outside of that. Just a statement. This lineup needs to be able to pop off and explode against elite pitching. And that's what Raisel Iglesias has been. Shut down by Sale. Shut down by Spencer Schwellenbach. You got to bounce back, because this team may need the bats to win the World Series. The way that this pitching situation is working out for them It's got to be giving you flashbacks borderline from last year when everybody was hurt and you were relying on a bunch of pitchers that had no proven track record in October. You've got a situation right now where Flaherty, who didn't look particularly good on Saturday, is going to be a main component, though he has been good since he came over. So I think you feel comfortable there. Yamamoto's back. Please, for the love of God, don't let Yamamoto get hurt, because if he does, I don't know. Because if Yamamoto goes down, because now it looks like Tyler Glasnow is not going to be available. According to Dave Roberts, Tyler Glasnow is unlikely to pitch again this season, regular or post. So forget about that. So you've got to hope that Yamamoto stays healthy and ramps up. You need Jack Flaherty to be big, and you need Walker Buehler to go out there and do this. Now, I understand Atlanta put up 10. Atlanta put up 6 on Friday. Atlanta was scoring runs against your pitchers. But this Braves team, this lineup, this offense is not the dangerous Braves offense we saw last year. We have not seen that team at all this year. So take it with a grain of salt that Walker Buehler had his best start against the Atlanta Braves, because this is not the 2023 Atlanta Braves lineup that led Major League Baseball in home runs. They're going to finish with like 100 less home runs than they did last year. But still, we give him credit. You need to see the good signs, because he needs maybe inside himself. And again, today wasn't even that great. 5 walks. In one inning, it got out of control, but you've got to... You need that third guy that you can rely on in the postseason. And I don't know where it's going to come from. Maybe it's Walker Buehler. Maybe it's Clayton Kershaw. He can come back. I understand Gavin Stone, the timing for him setting up that they're hoping he gets an appearance next week, not the week coming up, but next week, which is the final week of the regular season, so that he's ready for the postseason. Tony Gonsolin is making rehab starts, hoping that Tony Gonsolin comes back and helps. It's going to be really interesting to see how this Dodgers team navigates from a perspective of pitching. But an absolute statement with the bats: if you're going to have a situation where the pitching isn't steady, you have to be able to go out there and score a ton of runs. And they made that statement today. At any point, we can pop off and we can explode. Good job by this Dodgers lineup to get going with 2 outs against the best closer in baseball since June. That was impressive. That was impressive. Here's a question talking about the pitching. All right. I bring this up because it was brought up in the USA Today this morning. Bob Nightingale, one of the top bullet points in his Around the Base Paths section, which he does after the main story, was this: with the LA Dodgers, or while the Los Angeles Dodgers are not ruling out the possibility of Shohei Ohtani taking the mound if they reach the NLCS or World Series, the simple idea reeks of desperation. Let me sort of clarify this and straighten it up if you haven't heard it. The Dodgers are not ruling out the possibility of Ohtani pitching in the NLCS or the World Series. My headphones are falling off at the news. Okay. Comment away, live or replay. What do you think about Shohei Ohtani coming out of the bullpen in the NLCS or the World Series? $700 million in recovery from his second shoulder, elbow, arm procedure, would say no. Hell no. There's years beyond 2024 that are important to you. So throwing him out there seems absolutely insane. Brave throws. Exactly. Risky. Do you want to risk it? There are 700 million reasons why. There are countless years remaining on the contract is another reason why. But here's something that we need to consider. What if Ohtani wants to? Do you tell him no? Do you say, look, I know you want to, but no. Why no? Because of the money? Can you tell Ohtani no if he wants to do it? You need to save him from himself? What if he thinks he needs to do it? What if Yamamoto goes down in the NLCS and they are able to limp their way into the World Series, but they need another arm and he's ready? Do you do it? Do you consider it? Obviously, they're going to, because they're not ruling it out. At the same time, consider this. You think about, there are years down the road. And yes, there are years that Ohtani is under contract down the road. But they are not years that are, that you are guaranteed anything. How many years have the Dodgers been the favorites in the National League West, predicted to win the World Series? Doesn't happen. They won it in 2020. Nobody wants to give them credit for it. This Dodgers team, if they are in a position to win the World Series, do they almost feel like they have to? Especially if Ohtani wants to and says, I want to do this. I want to pitch. I'm good. And if the doctors clear him, there are steps that the obvious knee-jerk reaction is, hell no. But as a content creator, start thinking about, well, what are the reasons no? What are the reasons yes? The reasons no are the obvious reasons, but the reasons yes are, what if he's cleared? What if he wants to? What if it is the thing that gets you to win a World Series? Because you are not guaranteed to win the World Series year in and year out. And this is a team that has felt that firsthand because they have been so good through the regular season. They are such a good team. They are loaded with talent, but they're still not winning the World Series. So it is not a guaranteed thing. So I am, from a fan standpoint, I cannot wait to see how this plays out. Now, it would be amazing if he does come out of the bullpen. I think it's got a 1% chance of happening. Does he get cleared? Does he want to do it? Is it the thing they need to win? Because, again, Yamamoto's gone down. Buehler's ineffective. Flaherty's struggling. Maybe. Again, they're not ruling it out. I'll give it a 1%, which even seems high at 1%. But, again, it would be fascinating on so many different levels on either side of the fence if he actually pitches. So that'll be something to watch. Something else that has been interesting to watch is what the hell's going on with the Baltimore Orioles. The Baltimore Orioles are 3-7 over their last 10. And over the weekend, they played the Detroit Tigers, a team that is trying to climb their way back into the wild card, and they are doing so thanks in part to the Orioles and thanks to the Minnesota Twins, who had a rough week. The Orioles faced the Tigers without seeing Tarek Skubal, but still lost that series. Dropped 2 out of 3 to the Detroit Tigers. You can't do that. Kader Montero went out there. I believe it was Montero on today, shut him down. You had bullpen days. You almost got no hit on Friday down to the last out. Gunnar Henderson had to break it up with 2 outs in the 9th. And that's the problem. It's the bats, because this weekend the pitching was there. Cade Povich looked good. 5 innings, 8 strikeouts today. Corbin Burns looked good. Again, that's 4 straight good outings from Corbin Burns. That rocky Corbin Burns thing, I think that's a thing of the past now. 4 good ones in a row from Corbin Burns, and then they were almost no hit, despite 6 2/3, 1 run allowed from Zach Eflin. So they're getting the pitching, what we're all concerned about when it comes to the Orioles. Can they pitch? They're getting it right now. Now, these are guys that if we get into October, I don't know if I can trust Cade Povich in October. They have to. Maybe Gunnar Henderson comes back. Not Gunnar Henderson. Grayson Rodriguez. Maybe Grayson Rodriguez comes back and Cade Povich can slide into a bullpen role. because if you go into October and Grayson is back, obviously your rotation is going to go Burns, Eflin, and Grayson as your top three. And then maybe you go to Suarez or Kramer. Cade Povich is coming out of the bullpen and could be a pretty good option out of the bullpen. But the bats are a serious problem right now for the Baltimore Orioles. I mean, you're getting good stuff from Gunnar Henderson. Cedric Mullins is having a decent stretch. Outside of that, we're looking for guys. Anthony Santander, over the last couple of weeks, just two home runs. Now, just two home runs is, you know, but look, two home runs over the last 15, 16, 17 days, that's not going to get it done. Adley Rutschman, 10 for 45 with two extra base hits. Colton Cowser, the AL Rookie of the Year, isn't really doing anything. Ryan O'Hearn isn't doing anything. Jackson Holliday is a nightmare right now. There are so many bats. Eloy, you can't put him out there. Coby Mayo can't hit a damn thing. This Orioles team, it was all about the pitching. Now it seems to be about the hitting, and it's even a step further than that. Did you see the article in Sports Illustrated earlier in the week? Before the team was almost no hit right down to the last out, Cedric Mullins gave a quote to Rock Cubacho. I think I mispronounced that, but I'm going to power through as if I got it right. This is from Cedric Mullins. This is considering the morale of the Orioles clubhouse right now. Brandon Hyde, step it up. Here it is from Mullins. It's not at its best, the morale. It's not terrible either. Well, that's not good. So it's not at its best. It's not terrible. Like, the scale of like good to bad, terrible, not, if we're going with not terrible, that's how we're describing it. That's also, that doesn't cross the threshold into the think of this as red, think of this as green, this is good, this is bad. We're still in the red if we're calling the morale not terrible. We're not up in the green. We got soundly beat today, but the beauty of baseball is we come out tomorrow and set the tone for us to move forward. The team nearly got no hit the next day. That is from Cedric Mullins, again, to Rock Cubacho. I know I'm mispronouncing that. I'm sorry. Rock's not watching, thank God. Otherwise, we'd lose him. So this is happening on top of it. The team is struggling. At first, it was the pitching we were worried about. Now the pitching's been better over the last week and week and a half. And now the bats have gone quiet. They get San Francisco to start the week. That is going to be, in theory, an opportunity for them. I got to take a look at the schedule. Is there going to be a Logan Webb situation? I got to look at that real quick. Let's see if we can pull that up. Will they see Webb? Let's take a look. They are off on Monday. So they play Tuesday. Oh, Jesus. Oh, no. It's worse. Snell. They will face Snell on Tuesday. They will face Birdsong on Wednesday. And on Thursday, they face Logan Webb. Oh, God. This is bad news. This is bad news for a team that is struggling with the morale, struggling with the bats. This weekend, you saw Corbin Burns. Corbin Burns will not be pitching against San Francisco. So you're not even going to be able to throw your best starter out against the Giants. You're going to have Zach Eflin on Thursday. You're going to have Dean Kramer on Wednesday. And you're going to have Suarez on Tuesday. It is right there. Dropping 2 out of 3 to the Giants is right there. And look, at this point, we'll talk about the wild card, and we'll talk about all that in a minute. But when we are considering the Orioles and their prospects for October, we're not concerned about them making the postseason. That's not an issue here. They're 4.5 up. They're sitting at the top of the wild card standings. But what is a problem is they're going to slide out of any contention for the American League East, which means they will be playing in the first round. You want to try to avoid that, because what's going to happen, if you have to play in the first round, that means you're going to have to burn Corbin Burnes early, which means when you go to the next round, Burnes may not go back out there until you're down 0-1, 0-2, if that's the way things play out. Hopefully that's not how it plays out, but let's say things are going, trains going off the tracks. Corbin Burnes won't be able to save you if you're down in that series in round two. That's the problem. And they are just falling farther back. They are now 3 games behind the New York Yankees. They do get to play the New York Yankees, not this week coming up, but the week after that, which could, again, pull, if the Yankees are ahead by 4 or 5, can pull them right back if you can go out there and take care of business. But the problem is you're looking at a sweep. You have to sweep the New York Yankees. That's what the Orioles are setting themselves up for. The necessity of a sweep when they play the Yankees. And that's highly unlikely. Best case scenario, they get 2 out of 3. And how you don't really eliminate or trim the gap if you only get 2 out of 3. You got to get all of them. You get 2 out of 3, you're only moving up 1 game. So if you go into that series and you're 3 back, you're going to finish. You're going to be 2 back and heading into the final weekend. So the Orioles got to get this together, have to get the morale, needs to improve, and the bats need to wake up. Again, Gunner's been fine. Mullins has been better. But the rest of the team, the rest of the team needs to fire it up, and they need to rediscover that Oriole magic that they had earlier in the season when they were one of the top run scoring teams in baseball. They're just not that right now. But they got to find it. They got to find it. And again, they don't have a great opportunity coming up with San Francisco to start the week, because they're going to see Snell and Webb, the two best pitchers in the Giants, on the Giants. And their bats are as quiet as they've been. Oof. Speaking of the wild card situation, because it is getting a little wild out here. So this is how the American League wild card looks right now. Again, 4.5 up for the Baltimore Orioles. Comfortable at grabbing a wild card spot, but again, sliding behind, now 3 behind the New York Yankees in the East, which we don't like that, which means they're going to be playing. But look at Kansas City. Kansas City is only 2 games away from grabbing that spot from the Baltimore Orioles. Kansas City this week dropped 2 out of 3 to the Yankees, but took 2 out of 3 from Pittsburgh. So now we have a tight situation between Baltimore and Kansas City for the top wild card spot. But the Minnesota Twins, we're going to talk about the National League in a minute, which will be focused on Braves and Mets. But what has happened in the American League? Look at the Minnesota Twins. The last couple of weeks have been very disappointing. Last week swept by Kansas City. Last week swept by Kansas City over the weekend. They bounced back. They got 2 out of 3 from the Angels. But over the weekend, they dropped 2 out of 3 to the Cincinnati Reds. This is losing stuff, which has allowed the Detroit Tigers, who at the same time have gotten hot. They have gotten hot and climbed back in without the help of Jack Flaherty, who they traded at the deadline. You have to wonder if they would like to go back in time and undo that, because that would certainly be a nice boost, because they didn't really get a strong return for Jack Flaherty, considering what the Blue Jays got for Kikuchi. And Flaherty, we all hold in higher regard and has been pitching very well. The situation with Flaherty, and Sean is saying, no, they wouldn't. That's a good point. Sweeney has been good. Sean, that's a very good point. Sean, I got you, buddy. I got you. No, that's a good point. I like the Sweeney addition there. He has been really good. So we maybe don't undo that, but Flaherty's pitching. Okay, Sean, point taken. But here's what I'm going to say about the Detroit Tigers. They are set up now with how the Minnesota Twins have been playing to get, not just get back into this thing, but absolutely grab it. The Detroit Tigers, I'm moving through here, trying to grab the schedule. The Detroit Tigers have one of the easier schedules the rest of the way. They just took 2 out of 3 from Baltimore. They'll see Baltimore. They get 3 more against Baltimore. They got 3 against Kansas City. We're 5 games back in Kansas City. We're not too worried about that. Win that series. But you got 6 games.
My daughter was diagnosed with medulloblastoma. Lily lost the ability to walk, talk, and all of her motor functions. I wondered if I'd ever hear her say dad again.
Games against Tampa, 6 games against the Chicago White Sox. That's a lot. At this point, when they've only got 12 games remaining to grab, to have 6, half of your games, Chicago White Sox, sweep that. Take all 3 of them. Then you got Tampa. Get at least 2 of those. And with Baltimore's struggles, with Minnesota's struggles, Detroit is looking really good to get back in. The Seattle Mariners, again, thank you, Minnesota Twins, because even though Seattle's gotten hot and they are winning, they are still not really gaining any ground on the Houston Astros. But because Minnesota has been struggling, Seattle has had an opportunity to gain ground on the wild card situation. Seattle just had the games against the Rangers. They have a few more games against the Rangers. They get 3 against Oakland. They have an opportunity to do some damage against Houston. It's not this week coming up, but it's the week after. The Seattle Mariners will face the Houston Astros. And at that point, that could maybe decide the West. We'll see how things play out. The Mariners do have a challenging schedule with the 6 games, Houston and the Yankees. They've been winning their games. They've been getting the job done. They have been able to stay in it. And again, thanks to the Twins' struggles, stay not just in it, but stay really close in the Boston Red Sox. Boston Red Sox, after dropping today's game to the New York Yankees, are 75-75. You would think unlikely to get in, but what the Boston Red Sox have in their back pocket are 3 games against the Minnesota Twins. So even though Boston's here at 75-75, and there are 2 teams ahead of them, 2 teams that they won't play, so if they're beating the Minnesota Twins, but at the same time the Tigers and Mariners are winning their games, the Tigers and Mariners are just going to keep moving up. But if Boston can go take all 3 from Minnesota, that's next weekend. Next weekend, Boston and Minnesota, that could reshape how this wild card situation looks. In the National League, let's focus on that one. So this screenshot was taken before the Braves game concluded. And we now have a situation where the Mets and Braves are back with the same record. Mets hold the tiebreaker. Keep that in mind. The Mets have the tiebreaker. So even when this is updated, at this point, if you go on MLB.com, it will be updated. Again, I grabbed this screenshot before the live stream started. You have a 81-68 mark for both teams, with the Mets with the tiebreaker. So the Braves, in essence, are behind by a game. Braves are in a tough spot here. They have 1 more against the Dodgers, do the Braves tomorrow. But this Atlanta Braves team has a challenging schedule. They get 3 against Kansas City. They have 3 against the Mets next week. Not the week coming up, but the week after. They do get games against the Marlins and the Reds, but the Reds just did that thing again where the Reds look good. When the Reds look bad, then the Reds look good. I don't know what this team is half the time. At the end of the day, they are a below 500 team, but you get my point, right? The Cincinnati Reds are on the Braves schedule as well. So this Braves team that needs to finish 1 game better than the New York Mets is in a very challenging spot. Another game against the Dodgers tomorrow. You've got the Marlins, you've got the Reds, then you've got the Mets, and you've got the Royals. That's not an easy schedule. That is not an easy finish. And that's what it's all about. But at the same time, because the Mets and the Braves are pushing each other, that has created an interesting situation with the Diamondbacks and the Padres. The Diamondbacks won the crazy game today against the Milwaukee Brewers, and the Diamondbacks are now at a position where they need to keep winning games. Otherwise, they could find themselves in a spot where they're behind the Braves and the Mets. And Arizona, a team that I believe could win the World Series. This Arizona team, with their offense and with Zach Gallen pitching like he's pitching and other key contributors in that rotation, I believe this Arizona Diamondbacks team could win the World Series. They are a top 10 team in our power rankings and likely will finish that way. Do we only have two, three more? They could end up missing the postseason if they don't win the necessary games. If they had not won today, it would have been a sweep. And the trouble is, if they're going to have difficulties with Milwaukee, they have seven games. They've played three of them down the stretch. Starting Friday to the end of the season on the 29th, they had seven games against Milwaukee. They can't afford to have trouble with the Brewers. They get four more against Milwaukee. And they just dropped two out of three. That cannot be a team that gives you trouble. You have to at least hold your own, because the Braves and the Mets are now right up your ass. You cannot drop games. The Arizona Diamondbacks have a challenging schedule. Outside of these games against Milwaukee, they've also got San Diego, they've got San Francisco, and they've got Colorado. Now, the Colorado game should be okay, but as everybody comes to find at some point, Colorado's difficult. In the three games against San Francisco, it's really going to boil down to, what are the matchups? Who do you get matched up against? Do you have to go up against Sale and Webb like the Orioles do? Because if you're going up against Sale and Webb, that's a whole different situation. So the matchups are going to be important for Arizona, because this all of a sudden looks like a very challenging stretch. Milwaukee four more times. San Diego for three. Three for Colorado, three for San Francisco. It's we debuted the panic rankings yesterday. They already need to be updated. Arizona needs to be in the top five of the panic rankings right now. Even though you're sitting there with the number two wildcard spot, this could completely change. Next week, you could be on the outside looking in, and the Braves and Mets are only going to push each other. Now, what you've got going for you if you're Arizona is that the Braves and Mets will go head-to-head for three games, and maybe while those two teams are duking it out, you can sort of step around and just kind of, excuse me, pardon me, let me get by and get back into your number two spot. So the Diamondbacks are in an interesting spot. The San Diego Padres, that's why San Diego needs to put Arizona away when they match up. Because if you have trouble, if you're San Diego, you have trouble with Arizona, all of a sudden you're getting pulled into that cloud of hands and feet and everything, where you just want to stay away from that and keep winning your games and stay in this thing. But the Mets and how good they've been playing. Guys, I'm going to say, I had a moment where I was like, oh my God, it's happening. Before Bryce Harper started hitting home runs, before the Real Muto walk-off, when the Mets won the first game against the Phillies, and then they were up and the game was moving later on in the night, I'm like, wait a minute. Are the Mets going to take this series? Are the Mets going to start beating on the Phillies now? Because if that's going to happen, then we need to have a difficult conversation here. In the end, the Phillies do what the Phillies are supposed to do in this situation, because what's also happening while all this is going on are the Philadelphia Phillies would like to maybe finish with the top seed in that spot right now by two games over the Dodgers, by taking two out of three from the New York Mets. After there was a minute where I was like, wait a minute, is this really, is this about to happen? So it's going to be a fantastic finish with the Padres, the Diamondbacks, the Braves, and the Mets. The team of destiny. Cubs and Cardinals, I'm sorry. Cubs, the whole Rockies thing, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The Chicago Cubs learned firsthand something that countless teams have learned, that the Colorado Rockies are a pain in the ass. The Chicago Cubs, after taking 2 of 3 in L.A., dropped 2 out of 3 in Colorado. This Colorado team has done this to others this year. They took 2 out of 3 from Atlanta. They took 2 out of 3 from San Diego. They swept the Texas Rangers. They swept the Padres. They took 2 out of 3 from the Phillies. They took 2 out of 3 from Cleveland. They took 2 out of 3 from Kansas City. Yeah, this is a Colorado team that I'm talking about. A Colorado team that's bottom 3 in the league, sweeping teams that are going to be in the postseason, winning series 2 out of 3. And when Cleveland and Kansas City and Atlanta and San Diego roll up to Colorado, you're expecting to take care of your business and at the very least win that series. Cubs, after taking 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers, were not able to do that against the Rockies. So the Cubs just need literally to not lose any more games. And the reason why they can't lose any more games is because they have a Braves team and a Mets team. They're just fighting. 5.5 back is a big number at this point when we only have 2 weeks left of the season. This time, 2 weeks, regular season is over, gang. It's it. September 29th. This does not bleed into October. This is done on the 29th. You've got a St. Louis Cardinals team that has fallen below 500. Anybody that hates the St. Louis Cardinals, all I'll say is you're welcome. Sweep, baby. Let's go, Blue Jays. The Toronto Blue Jays swept the St. Louis Cardinals. The Toronto Blue Jays this year had three. They beat the hell out of the Angels. Jesus, that's right. They swept the Angels 4-game set, and they swept a 3-game set against the Angels. They swept the White Sox long time ago, and now they have swept the St. Louis Cardinals. Easily the best team they have swept this year. I'll give you that, St. Louis Cardinals, that this you are the best team the Blue Jays have swept this season, but now 7.5 back in the wild card, they're toast. They have to win every single game, and the Mets or the Braves, well, both of them, just need to start dropping games left and right. So the Cardinals, the wild card is going to be, I think we're gonna see this go all the way to the end. We're going to see the Mets and Braves next week. Again, I keep saying next week, but I mean the week after. Week after this week coming up is going to be amazing. Yankees and Orioles, Braves and Mets, Astros and the Seattle Mariners in what could be postseason defining matchups. You've also got a Diamondbacks and Padres series, the final weekend of the season, which, let's see how this plays out, could end up being the biggest for those two, the biggest series that weekend. Because it could decide if one of them's out. What if the Padres are in a situation where if they sweep the Diamondbacks are done? That's real. Holy DCE, was it back in June? Was that the White Sox sweep? SG, do the Padres still have a good shot at the division since the Dodgers have to face the Rockies 6 times? So the way the division, this comes down to a gut thing. There is obviously a chance that the Padres could win the National League West. I think it is unlikely. We are sitting here with a 3.5 game difference. If the Dodgers had lost today, it'd be 2.5, and that would feel really tight. And I think that would be one of the top stories that you hear about on baseball talk radio over the next, you know, when you're listening to wherever you're getting your content on Monday, I think Padres and Dodgers being tight would be one of the top stories if it was 2.5 games. The fact that we are looking at 3.5, 2.5 just feels different. The Dodgers and Padres will go head to head. That's really the key. Can the Padres keep it this tight until next week?